Mr. Little, good morning to you, and is it Ms. Lucas?
Yes, sir.
You are going to argue, I take it. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Little, then, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Adam Richard Little with Nebraska Legal Group on behalf of the appellant, Brian Karas. We are here today with two issues. The first is that the district court abused its discretion in terminating the alimony at 180 months in this case, as opposed to its original determination of life. The second issue before the court is that there was an abuse of discretion due to an inequitable division of the marital estate. The standard of review in this case in issues of spousal support and property division is one of a de novo review of the record for an abuse of discretion. Turning to the first issue, the reduction of the alimony in the award in this case from life to 180 months was inequitable and an abuse of discretion. This issue raises two primary points. The first is the intersection between an alimony award and the Uniform Services Former Spouse Protection Act and the award of a disability portion from the military pension. The second intersection is the propriety of alimony for life. Now, in this case, the original order was a stipulated decree of dissolution that was entered in July of 2020. That decree provided for a division of disposable military pension benefits from Ms. Dvorak, equivalent to about $4,000, or half of it going to Mr. Karas of about $2,000.
That original decree is based upon a settlement agreement, correct?
That is correct.
And jumping ahead a couple procedural steps in the story here, that decree was vacated based upon a finding of fraud.
That is correct.
So at that point, does the court just start anew and allow the evidence and make its ruling based upon the evidence?
The court's original order vacating that portion of the decree specifically kept the issue narrow to the ones of spousal support and division of the marital estate, particularly because due to the settlement nature, there was no evidence before the court to make determinations. And those two issues are interrelated, so the court had to vacate for that purpose. The court did specifically indicate that it was only vacating in that respect, and it was still going to uphold the other portions with respect to custody, child support, etc. And so due to the relationship between the spousal support and the property, the court had to vacate both of those portions.
And the appellant has raised no issue with the breadth of the vacation of that order?
No, neither party has. Now, with respect to that division, at the time of that settlement agreement, as the justice points out, all parties, the record indicates all parties were under the belief that that Ms. Dvorak had several separate sources of military benefits. The first was the disposable military benefits equivalent to approximately $4,000. They also believed that she had a separate non-divisible disability portion, and the decree specifically delineated that portion to indicate that was her separate non-divisible property. She was also receiving separate disability VA benefits. There was also a provision that allowed for $750 a month, I believe for 58 months, that the decree classified as an equalization payment, but the record shows all the parties intended and believed that it was in lieu of alimony, but was only classified as such due to tax reasons.
What was the tax reason that they were trying to address here?
The record doesn't indicate specifically. I believe it was perhaps under the misguided belief at the time that it was still taxable as alimony. I knew the law had changed relatively around that time. So I believe that was, but the record does not have a lot of other information as to the purpose.
Would that have been with the intent to commit tax fraud then?
No, Your Honor. When in the purposes of this, the parties are able to negotiate how they're able to allocate that and classify it in purposes of division of the property. I don't believe the intent was to commit tax fraud, but to classify it differently. And what we're focused here is on what the intent of that property is, that portion is, and that's addressed in the second issue of the equitable division of the marital estate. Turning back to the alimony issue here, the trial court following the vacation of that order held an evidentiary hearing looking at whether or not to award alimony to address the fact that her disposable income from the pension was no longer actually disposable. Following that entry of the decree, there was showing that the military award was actually 100% disability. And under the U.S. FSPA, that is simply not divisible as marital property.
I beg your pardon. So when the initial decree was approved, there was a disposable amount, but what? And there was also the disability, i.e., not disposable.
Not quite. Their belief was what you're describing. The record shows that all the parties were operating under the belief that there was a portion of disposable income. After the order to vacate, it was later found that there was, in fact, a letter from 2015 showing that all of the military retirement was disability retirement. And the record...
Oh, which wouldn't be split.
Correct. And so that created the issue here.
That creates the issue now, because there's no veteran benefit available to be split if you're interested in awarding some alimony.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the distinction here, that is only with respect to division of the property. The availability of that disability income can be considered for purposes of determining alimony. And that's ultimately what the district court did in its first order, resolving the modification of that decree.
So what does the record tell us about your client's ability to earn a living?
My client, he has an education. He is somewhat limited. There's disruptions in his career, he was a military spouse traveling and having interruptions. Furthermore, he had disruptions in his career as he was taking care of Ms. Dvorak's children from a prior relationship, as well as the party's children. Further, Mr. Karras is a cancer survivor that affected his employability. All of these factors are ones that would be considered under a standard alimony award and help to justify the award in this case. Now, with respect to the disability benefits, there's no dispute that when we know that they are disability, they cannot be divided as property. However, this court may consider such benefits in evaluating the party's economic circumstances for purposes of evaluating alimony. This court made such a decision in Kramer v. Kramer from 1997. Now, that case is a little different, and I think going to Justice Miller-Lerman's point, it's probably more on point there, that in that case, the husband, they had a military pension that was divided on a percentile basis, and after the decree was entered, the husband then waived a portion of his disposable benefits and converted them to disability benefits, all of which is permitted under the statutes. However, that had the result of shrinking the pie as far as what the wife was receiving. And this court then allowed the modification of alimony to account for the reduction in the benefits. Now, to be very clear, we are not alleging in this instance that Ms. Dvorak did any action post-decree. The evidence shows that the disability classification occurred prior to the decree. The issue is whether or not anybody knew about that on the record.
Isn't another issue here you're using a law from a modification situation where the status of this case was the court basically making its original determination?
Yes, that does pose an issue here, and what we're looking at is really the analogy of what the rationale was behind those purposes. And what we're looking at is the income that is available to the wife, to Ms. Dvorak here in this instance, for purposes of being able to pay alimony and the income disparity and other factors in that instance. there are also instances where this court has looked at whether or not the propriety of allowing alimony is a sort of offset for the gap in the marital estate caused by the disability benefits. Essentially, there's a very large gap in the marital estate. We can't divide that portion, but the court can consider it. And this court has done so in a few instances. One of which was prior to the U.S. FSPA in Pike v. Pike, when military pensions themselves could not be divided. This court allowed the award of alimony to essentially compensate for that distinction. In Taylor v. Taylor in 1984, this court modified a terminal alimony of 60 months to one of life. And in Hildebrand in 1991, there was lifetime alimony that was upheld that was modified by this court from $200 a month to $400 a month.
These are all before the Act, the Spouse Act.
Only Pike was before the USSBA, which was entered in 1982.
Thank you.
So all of these instances, ultimately the court abused its discretion, we believe, in modifying the term of the alimony from 180 months to 210 months. With respect to the division of the marital estate, I would rest on the arguments in our brief. I would just direct the court specifically to the inequity created between the gap of a lack of payments. I see my time has expired.
I do have one question for you. Mm-hmm. With regard to the Target bill and the 2019 tax debt, is there anything actually in the record that shows that was the court included that as determination of the equalization payment?
Your Honor, no. We concede that point was not in the record after review of the briefs.
Okay. Thank you.
With that, I submit the court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lucas. Good morning again.
Good morning. Mr. Chief Justice, your honorable justices, and opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is April Lucas, and I'm an attorney with Hightower Ruff Law. I am here today on behalf of Ms. Leslie Dvorak, formerly known as Ms. Leslie Karras. We are asking, Ms. Dvorak also is the appellee in this matter, as the court is aware, but we are asking the court today to affirm the district court's findings and after trial and the award of alimony duration, as well as the property division. And our argument today is simple. The district court did not abuse its discretion when it limited the term of alimony to 15 years, and it did not abuse its discretion when it divided the property between the parties.
I will ask you a quick procedural question before we get into that. There is no challenge by the appellee to the original vacation of the original decree, is there?
Thank you. That is correct.
Thank you.
To answer one of the questions that was asked regarding the division of the alimony originally in the original consent decree, I would argue to this court that the original consent decree is no longer applicable, that the basis for why that was entered, that order was vacated. Therefore, whatever the parties thought so or their intentions were at that time, there was a trial held in this matter. The district court viewed the evidence and the testimony and the parties and made an equitable and fair division based off of that trial. So the appellant continues to argue and bring up the original consent decree. However, that decree was vacated, so I would ask that the court take that into consideration and not in the sense that it is no longer valid and that the intentions of that consent decree are no longer valid in this case. This is a simple alimony division case. The court properly and in its order talked about the parties' situations. It did not talk about, when it made its findings, the military pension being divisible or that it should be some sort of offset to the pension that they thought that there was because it was really a disability award. The court simply divided the property and awarded alimony based on the equities in this case.
The veterans' benefits that are going to Ms. Dvorak are an asset of marriage.
Agreed, Justice.
Is that correct? But they are 100% disability.
That's correct.
So they're not divisible.
They are not divisible in the sense that
But they are what? Nevertheless, relevant to the total marital estate.
Exactly. Thank you, Justice Malamud. That is my point exactly.
Did the court treat them as income?
Yes.
To your client?
Yes.
In consideration of the alimony award?
Correct. Yes. And I think that was proper and that was the way the court should have handled it. I don't think the court would have had jurisdiction or the ability under federal preemption to do anything other than that. In this case, this is just a simple alimony division. And while in our motion to alter or amend the April order, it was our position that Mr. Dvorak was not entitled to alimony. We did not appeal that issue because the abuse of discretion standard, the district court found that there was circumstances that would entitle him to alimony. The only issue that we believe was improper was the lifetime award, because there are no exceptional circumstances in this case that would justify an award of lifetime alimony. The 15-year modification that the district court, when they modified in July of 2022, was proper and not an abuse of discretion to limit it after reviewing the equities in the case. And there were some irregularities in the property settlement that the district court had to fix.
Specifically, what were those irregularities?
The first regularity was on the principal, on the first, I'm not sure if your honors have this pulled up, but it's exhibit 157, and the district court erroneously gave Ms. Dvorak credit for her principal retirement account twice, and I believe that was not disputed, that that was an error, and so that was taken out. The district court originally gave credit for the vehicles that were, there was no testimony regarding the value of a Mercedes or a Ford Taurus. There was testimony regarding a Mercury Mountaineer, but the district court in its final order took all the vehicles away essentially and just gave zero value. So there was testimony to support that there was no value on the Mercury, or I'm sorry, that there was no value on the Mercedes or the Ford Taurus. There was on the Mercury Mountaineer, but the court still took that asset off. And the court took off the Capital One account that had a small balance of $3.40. The court did not include the Nebraska Furniture Mart debt. It did not include the Target or the 2019 tax debt, as I believe was pointed out but was argued in appellant's brief. It did add a Sam's card, an Ulta credit card, and a USAA credit card, all three of which there was testimony in the record that those credit cards were premarital, that they were marital debts pre-divorce, and that they were used for the benefit of the marriage, and there was no testimony from appellant that disputed that. So those were regarding the debts. And then the mortgage, they changed slightly. They had the wrong refinance balance amount. And so that was changed in the final balance sheet.
What about the $15,000 to address the $750 payments that are being made?
Yes, thank you. That was not included in the balance sheet. And it's my understanding that's because those payments were a part of the original consent decree as a property settlement, and then when that got vacated, there was no bucket or no pocket to put that in the balance sheet because it wasn't an asset. It was, and the only way to give credit for it was just as the court did, which was to award Ms. Dvorak credit toward her portion of the $15,000. Otherwise, he would have received the benefit of her paying this $15,000 for an order that had been vacated and was no longer in effect.
How do you respond to the argument that that was alimony by another name?
That is nonsense, that what it was, whatever they wanted to call it, the original consent decree did not name it alimony, and that it's, you can say that I called it this for this purpose, but the actual consent decree did not call it alimony, and there was not alimony awarded, and that the district court clearly did agree that this was a payment that was made based on that decree that was vacated and awarded the property or awarded that back to Ms. Dvorak. Did that answer your question?
Yes. With regard to the approximately $25,000 equalization payment that was ordered by the court against the appellant, did the appellee request for that to be paid in 180 days?
Yes, and the
With the property division that occurred with most of the assets and most of the debt going towards the appellee, and the financial information that was put forward by the appellant, how did the appellee believe that could possibly be paid in 180 days?
A couple ways, Your Honor. I would argue that the balance sheet of appellant showed that he had a negative of $500. And when he would be getting paid the alimony, he would also then be getting another $2,000. So theoretically or hypothetically, he would be getting $1,500 in excess a month, because that would equal him out the $2,000 in alimony, and then he would have that $1,500. Additionally, there was a retirement account that wasn't included as marital property that belongs to the appellant. And I know that there's the Court of Appeals case that talks about using a quadro or some other form or mechanism to award that payment, that equalization payment. But also, I don't think the appellant argued that he didn't have the means to pay it in the lower court. I don't think that was before the lower court, and that the lower court didn't have the chance to decide that he didn't have the means to pay that equalization payment. I think there was some discussion about his income, but not specifically that this would be onerous and for what reason. There was no hearing specifically held on that.
Was the challenge that's before us today as to amount, not to term of payment?
Only to the term of payment. Only for lifetime. The challenge today was just about the whether it should be a lifetime award or whether it should be limited to the 15 years.
And I apologize for the equalization payment is what I was referring to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
The challenge that was made by the appellant to the equalization payment was actually to amount, correct? Not to the term of payment provision?
Oh, reading their brief with the three assignments of error and one, I think that it was more about the ability to pay in that time period, not the amount.
Okay.
Would you remind me of the ages of the parties in relation to the 15-year term of alimony?
Mr. Dvorak was, I believe, 56 at the time of the trial, and he is now 58. And I apologize, Your Honor, I did not know off the top of my head how old Ms. Dvorak is, but she is also in her 50s, and I could, if you want me to look through my notes and get that for you, I absolutely will. I'm out of time. If Your Honors have any other questions for me, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I ask that the court please affirm the district court's findings.
Thank you very much.
You may be excused.
Well, you may, I believe. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so counsel, you may be excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The next case of the day, then, is State v. Mabior,